This is Dr. Holly Lucille's Mindful Medicine. Here's Dr. Holly Lucille.
Hi there, mindful listeners. Thank you so much for spending part of your day with us. All right. Anybody living with chronic pain? Let me tell you something. My patients that come in that are living with chronic pain, it is something else. And it is difficult to treat. And it also is a big anchor on quality of life and sometimes a slippery slope into even more problems. So I have an incredible guest with us today. We are going to talk about living with chronic pain, but also moving beyond it because she is the author of a new book called The Pain Companion, Everyday Wisdom for Living with and Moving Beyond Chronic Pain. I want to introduce to you Sarah Ann Shockley. We can call her Sarah, though. She suffered a work-related injury in the fall of 2007. This resulted in severe nerve pain and debilitation. I can't tell you how many people I have heard this sort of same story from. So, of course, available treatments were medications. They were unable to help. So she actually developed a unique approach to healing that works with awareness. So perfect guess for our mindful medicine show, active imagination, and shifting relationship to pain itself. She writes in a blog called The Pain Companion blog, and has been a columnist for Pain News Network and is a regular contributor to the Mighty, which is a 1.5 million member online community for those living with chronic illness. So that's called The Mighty. Sarah, thanks for being here.
I'm so delighted to be here, Holly. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I have to tell you something. This is a big subject that I'm extremely passionate about because I have too many patients, I would say, that this is one of many or if not the most glaring chief complaint. And their lives have been turned upside down. So you, in 2007, had a work-related injury. What happened to your life?
Yes. Yeah, I'll tell you briefly. I contracted thoracic outlet syndrome from computer use, unfortunately. It came on seemingly overnight, although of course it was coming on for a while, but I didn't know it, I'm sure. So from using a very small computer and computer keyboard setup, a very non-ergonomic setup, and I'm almost 6 feet tall. So I was crunching the top part of my body without realizing it. And thoracic outlet syndrome is a collapse between the collarbones and the first rib. And in that area, it's becoming more and more prevalent with our use of computers, unfortunately. But in that area, we've got scalene muscle coming down from the neck. We've got some large nerve ganglia and arteries and veins in there. So all of that gets compressed and effectively squished, and it's really painful. And it's debilitating to the arms and hands, and it's very hard to move the neck. And eventually, the nerve pain goes throughout the body all the way to the feet. So almost overnight, everything stopped for me. And I know, I'm sure many listeners have had something similar happen, if not that condition, where pain moves in and your life seems to stop. I mean, you can't do what you used to do. It's really, really difficult. And for me, as we mentioned, nothing helped. I had a really, really severe version of it on both sides of my body. And the traditional, there are some physical therapy things that can help people with what we call TOS, but it didn't work for me. It just made it worse. So I was pretty much left to my own devices, and I'm not big on taking pharmaceuticals. I did try a few as part of, you know, the process that you go through with a doctor, but the side effects were so awful that I stopped those and was kind of left, wow, what do I do with this? And I'm sure, as you mentioned, many people are in that situation. Wow, I am in pain. It's not leaving. How do I deal with this?
Right. So, you know, that's the thing. And I love that you brought, I don't love that you brought up the medication piece, but it's important that you brought up the medication piece because not only are the side effects pretty darn debilitating and, like I said, a slippery slope into other clinical presentations,
yes,
but also extremely addictive. I mean, I don't want to run down the rabbit hole of the opioid addiction in our country and, well, in our world, I should say. But let's get to the good stuff. So, how did this experience with this thoracic outlet syndrome and your chronic pain lead you to write The Pain Companion?
Well, I, as I said, you know, things stopped. I was a single mom. I was the only person to provide for my son. It was really, really scary. I had to stop working immediately. So I went on workman's comp. It was a long process going through all of that and going on disability. But, it was like night and day. I used to be very active. I was the resourceful one. I was the one who, you know, held things together. I know many people, particularly many women, can relate to this as being moms and people who are working. And, you know, you're the only one there, and yet you're in terrible pain and also can't function very well. So there's a lot of fears and a lot of things that come up with that. And for the first about year, probably, you know, when something like this comes in, it's not chronic at first. It's just a thing. You know, you have a surgery, or you have an accident, or you get an illness. It's not chronic. It's just something that happens. And you go, okay, I don't like this, but I'll get through it. I'll heal. I'll come to the other side. And it might be a few months later. It might be a longer time. In my case, it was about almost 9 months into it that one of my doctors said, you know, you're not getting better. This isn't going to go away. And that hit me like a ton of bricks, because I thought the whole time, the first year, I was just, oh, I'm healing. It doesn't seem to be moving a lot, but it's going to get better. I'm going to be fine. And then you get the news, you're not going to be fine. And that in itself is just huge. And with that comes a whole lot of emotions that go with that, which we often don't talk about in terms of speaking about physical pain. But there's a whole emotional life that goes with identity and who are you now, and the loss of your life, really, and the loss of being the kind of parent you wanted to be. Of, you look down the road and, well, what's going to happen? Am I ever going to have a career again? Can I ever work again? Or am I going to, you know, whatever, all of these questions. And so all of that is, it's huge, huge, huge life-changing thing. And I know you spoke about the clients that you see that you know, have this kind of, it's really intensely affects your life. So after that kind of bombshell hit that probably I was going to get progressively worse, not better, and I was already extremely debilitated, I first went into kind of a depression about it, of course. It was like a shock. And I had been in the mode of, okay, I'm healing, I'm working with this, I'm doing all the stuff I'm supposed to do. It wasn't getting better, but I was being the good patient, and I was doing what I was supposed to do and trying these different therapies that didn't work, and one after another, and kind of keeping my hopes up. And after that, I went into kind of a stoic mode of, okay, well, I'm still a mom. I still have to slog through a day. I'm just going to put up with it. And that's kind of almost a, you know, we kind of are given those two options, most of us. You either fight it, or you're given pain medications, and you're given treatments that may or may not work, or you just kind of try to ignore it and put up with it. Those are kind of what we're given, most of us, to work with from the medical community.
Right, right.
And so I did that for literally like about 5 years. I just put up with it. I had to. I thought I had to. I was a mom. I had to keep going. And finally one day, and it was so hard to just wake up in the morning still in horrible pain. And I was in pain 24 hours a day. I know many people share that. And you wake up in the morning and you just, every day is like a battle to just get out of bed and keep going. And it's a physical battle, like it's physically difficult, but it's also emotionally, you know, it's like, oh my God, can I do this? And that's what led me to finally start, writing about it. Writing was really painful. Even holding a pencil was painful. I could barely close my hand to get a big fat, actually used like a felt tip pen. But I thought, I can't go on like this. I cannot imagine this is the rest of my life, and it could get worse. I just can't deal with that. So, and I can't just put up with it. That's not healing me. It had actually gotten progressively worse. It wasn't getting better. So I thought, okay, not working. Yes, please.
Yeah. Go ahead. Yes. Because you talk about, well, I'm not going to fight it. And that's always an interesting concept for me because, I've always thought about this, Sarah, in this way. When it comes to chronic pain, anything actually that's going on with the body, your body, my body, even things like cancer, because, you know, people have this saying, F cancer and all that. And I'm thinking, you know, well, fighting, it's going on inside of us. So is it counterintuitive to fight, you know, yourself, because this is what you're going through? But, as you say, shouldn't we be fighting pain, fighting pain? But you talk about letting go of the resistance towards pain.
Yeah. So yes, exactly. So we are, you know, we have a very pain averse culture, of course. I mean, nobody likes, I mean, very few people like pain, right? It's mostly, whoa, I don't want to go there. But what we're taught about pain is to avoid it, of course. Don't talk about it. Don't express it. Don't be with it and fight it. That's what we're given. Get rid of it as soon as possible. And sometimes that works. You know, sometimes that short term pain, you break your leg and there's some pain, but you kind of do what you need to do, you know, and you get some physical therapy and it heals and you're good. And sometimes even like a sprained ankle, it actually works for you to work through the pain and kind of move that ankle around even though it's painful. But when we get into the realm of chronic pain and we're fighting and we're fighting and we're doing and it's not moving, it gets really exhausting and it gets really depressing and discouraging. And for me, I got to the place when I realized this isn't happening. I have to find a different approach. Neither fighting it was working and neither was putting up with it working. And I started to look at a couple of things. One was when I started writing just for myself, I began journaling about my feelings about living with pain. I put down, it took me like a couple of years, I filled spiral notebooks. I had to write really slowly and hardly at all because I was in so much pain. But I started to express what was going on. That turned out to be a really important aspect of healing, actually, was to begin to express how I felt about the pain.
Hmm.
And when I looked at that and read it back to myself, it was really hard to read those journals because I saw, in a sense, I witnessed myself. And I thought, wow, that was really awful, Sarah. I mean, you know, when you're living through it, you're just trying to kind of get through a day. And when I looked at it, I thought, wow, that was really intense. But that act of looking at myself and witnessing what I'd been through emotionally really began to start the healing process because it started to move the... When I started writing about pain for myself, kind of journaling out my feelings about living with chronic pain, I began to see how the emotional aspects were part of the physical pain. In other words, there is a whole package of pain that we live in. And so beginning to express that was part of beginning to kind of loosen up all of that, which led me to begin to look at pain differently. You know, I kind of freed myself up a little bit and I started to, in the process of expressing how I felt about pain, I wrote letters to pain and I said, "Dear pain." And the first letters were really, you know, like, "What are you doing in my body? Why are you still here? I don't like you. Please go away." You know, all the things that we feel about pain. And I, after a while of doing that, I thought, well, I don't know. What if I let pain write back? You know, what does pain have to say? And that's not something
interesting
we're taught to think about, you know, that pain would have anything to, you know, pain's just something awful we try to get rid of. That's the way we see it. And I, because nothing else had worked and I was really on my own, I didn't have anything else to think of. I thought, well, what if I listen to pain? You know, maybe all of this pain, when you think about it, pain's a signal. It's something from our body trying to speak to us. And as you said earlier, it's really kind of, in a sense, it's part of us, you know, that the condition mm-hmm. we're in is also us. We're in it. It's in us, you know. So when we fight that pain and we try to battle it, in a sense, we're battling with ourselves. And, you know, that wasn't doing a whole lot of good. So I began to experiment a lot with, okay, how do you listen to pain? And what would pain say? And what does pain look like? And just imagining, so I started to develop some active imagination techniques for myself in terms of shifting my awareness of the pain in my body. And of course, the first thing we do is we don't want to be aware of it at all. That's the first, you know, it's like the first response is, I don't want to feel that, you know. But what I discovered is the way we are aware of it really affects it. So in other words, our sense of it's an enemy and that battle stance to me, I began to understand that that was affecting the way it was actually I was experiencing it in my body. It was affecting the way it showed up. Because of course, not only are we, you know, psychically, mentally, emotionally, whatever, pushing against it, we're also physically contracting when we feel pain. We often stop our breath. There's physiological responses that actually aren't very healing. We're kind of, you know, closing down a lot. We're cramping up. We're tightened. We may not even realize we're doing this, but kind of a natural response to pain. But I thought, well, can I do something like completely counterintuitive and almost opposite? What if I start to relax around it a little bit? And yes, I began to feel it even more. You know, at first you're like, whoa, you feel it even more. But then you go, okay, I didn't die. That was all right. I can feel that. And began to think about, what is pain? What's it doing here? What's it trying to tell me? And if it's a signal, excuse me, in a sense, it's me speaking to me. It's my body trying to get some kind of attention. And is the attention my body's trying to get the kind of attention of like, I hate you, I'm going to fight you, I'm going to cut you out, I'm going to stop you? Is that what it's really asking for? Or is it asking for something else? And again, it's the opposite of the way we think about pain. But I began to see that the way we perceive pain absolutely affects the way we experience it. And the way we experience it affects the way we work with it. And the way we work with it affects our healing process. So I kind of went all the way back to, how do I perceive pain? And can I shift that? And I began to talk to pain. And instead of yelling at it to go away, I said, okay, let's have a real conversation here. And you can do this by, you know, any listeners can do this by imagining that pain's sitting in a chair opposite you, for example. And just say, okay, there's my pain sitting there. Of course, it's in your body, but it's also, in a sense, it's almost its own entity. It feels like it is. It feels like somebody moved in. So you have this real sense of pain itself. And you just imagine it sitting in the chair, and you say, what do you have to say to me? And you just kind of allow it to, in your imagination, speak to you. And you might be surprised that pain doesn't always yell back at you. Pain right. is sometimes saying, wow, you know, thank you. I really needed you to yeah. listen to me. And you're like, whoa, yeah. really?
You know,
yeah,
I
need you to rest more.
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting what you're saying. Yeah. Obviously, my show is called Mindful Medicine. And the concept for me is that I think that if we could open our minds and actually just use our minds in all of these yeah. sort of circles of health and wellness, that we could start taking better care of ourselves, our family, make better decisions. And I think your point at the onset of the show, which is the, you know, I think you said something about we have a pain adverse,
yes.
country or, but, and,
culture,
and you're right. Who wants,
attitude.
Yeah, culture. Yeah. But I think not only
yeah.
what you're asking folks to do is really turning on their head, because I think not only physical pain, but I think that we have a very short tolerance for emotional pain,
yes.
other feelings that are painful, like shame or, and
absolutely.
I think what you're asking folks to do or what you're suggesting, and what you've done for yourself is to actually really open the mind and to go at that and get curious about this entire thing that's happening to your body.
Yes, absolutely. That's, open the mind and open the heart to,
yeah.
believe it or not, to pain, to your pain.
Yeah.
It's your body. It's your experience. And nobody can feel your pain but you. And
yeah.
it's asking to be felt. And, of course, again, this is so counterintuitive. It's like, no, 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 I don't want to go there. I don't want to give pain any attention. No, 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 it's just going to get worse. It's going to get bigger. And that's what we're taught. We're taught that if we pay attention to it, it will just get worse. And, yeah, if we pay a certain kind of attention to it, it does, you know, when we're clamping down and we're pushing against it. But that's when we bring in that kind of sense of awareness and mindfulness of, okay, what if it's, if I can pay a different kind of attention? What if I can soften my attention? So you kind of begin to think of pain as like, well, what if it was like a little kid, you know, that was like pulling on your pant leg, you know, it's hello, 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 I need some help, I need some help. And it's kind of like pushing it away, pushing it away, pushing it away, and it's still there. And then you finally kind of go, oh, it's a little kid. Oh, so you kind of get down and you say, okay, what do you need? Oh,
yeah.
I need
so, you know, I,
yeah. I need some help here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you're looking at a situation where you can either be a victim or a creative cause. And this
absolutely.
Is definitely creating a cause that it's your life. It's your body. Let's get into it. Let's lean into it. Let's get curious about it. So you mentioned breath
yeah.
When you were sort of mm-hmm. using your active imagination and talking to your
yeah.
pain. You say that working with breath can affect our pain levels and also the ability
yeah.
to heal. How did you come to that conclusion?
Yeah,
like, how does that actually work?
Well, I started thinking, well, can I meditate, you know, in terrible pain? Because that's a good way to relax. And, you know, so I tried to start meditating because I'd been a meditator, but sitting in a particular posture was really painful. Deep breathing was really painful. I was like, and that kind of went out the way. It was like, wow, it's making it worse. A normal, you know, typical kind of meditation did not work for me at all. So, but that put my attention onto my breath, because when you meditate often, you're putting your attention on your breath and you're just kind of breathing gently and easily. And even that was very, very painful. And I thought, you know, wow, how can I work with this differently? And I began to just pay attention to how I was breathing, because I thought, wow, I didn't realize breathing was so bad. It was so hard for me. I wasn't really noticing. And I began to notice that I was holding my breath a lot. You know, it's what you kind of do when you contract against pain and you feel some pain, you kind of go, and you don't realize you're restricting your breathing, because you think, if I breathe fully, I'll feel it more. Yeah, and sometimes you do. But when we're not breathing, we're not healing either. We got to have that breath moving through the body. So I began to just notice, you know, how I was breathing. And I thought, well, I can experiment with breath differently. So I started to, you know, deep breathing didn't work. So I thought, okay, I'll let myself breathe lightly. But what would it be like if I imagined breathing into the space where pain isn't? Like, there must be a space somewhere, even if it's not in my body, where there is no pain. So I kind of experimented with imagining. Of course, you're breathing in the same space in your body, but your imagination can allow you, using your mind, you can go out and imagine you're breathing in a pain-free space. And all of a sudden, your breath kind of just loosens up a little bit. And then I started to imagine, okay, what if I allowed myself, you know, what I've been doing with my breath is holding it back. I certainly don't want to give any breath to pain. I don't want to do that because I think it's going to get bigger. So I've been kind of like almost trying to separate my body in two places. Here's the place where the pain is, push against that, almost using breath as a wall against pain. And I thought, okay, what if I stop doing that and I just imagine breathing next to pain? You know, it's kind of, if I imagine myself sort of with my pain, just breathing gently next to it. And that shifted again, something slightly different. And then I moved into imagining, well, what if I gave pain some breath? That's also something we don't want to do, but I imagined pain breathing with me. We kind of just sat and breathed together. And again, not deep breathing, no special techniques, just as I'm breathing, I'm imagining pain's breathing with me. And I found that began to loosen things up a little bit. It loosened up my responses to pain physiologically, but also emotionally. And pain itself, oddly, began to feel like it was relaxing. I was giving it the attention it was requiring rather than the attention I thought I needed to do, which was to push against it. And I have a whole bunch of these things in my book, ways of, you know, working with breath, but giving pain even more space to breathe in. Again, really counterintuitive. But just saying, okay, just for a little minute, just for a second, pain, you get to breathe and take up the space you really need. And it kind of just relaxes. And that just doesn't go away instantly. You're not going to suddenly be pain-free. But the edges start to kind of get less acute, less intense. It just kind of, it's like, it is almost like another person with you that goes, oh, okay, I can breathe. I can breathe. I can just relax a little bit. And so just working with these techniques over time, not, you know, nothing instantly, except that if you can feel even the littlest shift in your pain by doing this, you know you can start to heal. Just a tiny shift is all it takes for you to go, aha, I can work with this. And then you give it time. One of the things I think we do with our healing, whether it's physical or emotional pain, is we have this rush, 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 hurry, 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 quick, quick, quick. A lot of things take time, and we have to kind of pull back a little bit on our schedule of when we're going to be through with something, you know. We do the same thing with grief, with our emotional things. We're, okay, hurry up, get over it, and get, you know, get back into life. And some things just require a certain amount of time and a certain amount of softness and compassion and kindness towards ourselves that we're not always used to giving. And that's one of the things that pain has taught me, is to be with myself very, very differently, as well as to sit differently.
Yeah, I was going to say, and being together as one differently. That's wonderful. I mean, just even breathing, you say it's like, if you don't breathe, you can't heal. Breath is, I mean, I can't tell you how many times throughout even the day where I just kind of dawns on me that I'm just not really just fully taking in a breath and getting that oxygen and creating that circulation and that space. And so that awareness is very profound. Yeah. So you also advocate that people actually tell their pain story.
Yeah, I do.
So tell me about that, because I think that. One of my mentors, Carolyn Mace, always, when she talks sometimes, I think, about, you know, constantly coming from our wounds or our pain, and maybe that's not the thing to do, but what is it about, really talking about the pain?
Yes. There is, you know, of course, there is the person that we've all run into who can't shut up about their latest operation or their whatever's going on with their body, and they're going on and on and on and on. I think that's what Carolyn Mace is talking about when we're just.
Sure.
We're talking, and we're refeeding it, and we're re-waking up. That's different from what I'm talking about. And that's the person I feel when people keep talking about it, it's because they feel like they haven't been heard. So, and sometimes people use it as a pity thing, or as a, you know, I'm the biggest victim or whatever. I'm not talking about that. So what I'm talking about is, and you really only need to do this possibly once. I'm not talking about you have to do this every day to everyone. You find someone you can trust, and you set up some ground rules. And the ground rules are that they don't get to interrupt you, that they will be somebody who can just listen and sit with you and be with you. They can commiserate a little bit, but they really shouldn't say a whole lot. They absolutely must not try to fix you or offer any advice or tell you what to do or ask you what you've been doing. You know, they have to be just a compassionate ear.
That's a whole nother show, by the way, of getting people to understand how to actually effectively do that. Please listen with your ears and not your mouth.
Not everyone can do this. So you want to find somebody who's probably been through something themselves, whether it's physical pain or they've had a loss in their life and they've, you know, somebody who's had some pain that gets it. And they may not know exactly what you're going through, but they get, it's important for me to just sit here. And if you can't find a person, honestly, you can talk to a dog or a tree. I mean, find something living that can be an ear for you if you can't find a person, and tell your story. And when I say tell your story, you're telling it from not so much from the complainy place or the, you're just going to, in an almost neutral way, say, look, this is not completely neutral, but you're going to just say, this is how pain has affected me. This is what I've had to go through. This is how hard it's been. This is what I have to get up to every morning. This is what I'm scared of. This is what's happened to my sense of myself. I don't even know who I am anymore. What am I going to do in the future? I don't know. This is what I have to deal with every day. This is, you know, these are all the pills I have to take. This is what's in the future for me. I don't even know. I can't even see my future anymore. Just let it out for this to this person, and just, as you're doing this, in a way, you will also be witnessing yourself, as I mentioned earlier. It's a way for you to just be heard. One of the things that I feel is so true about pain of any kind, whether it's physical or emotional or mental, whatever kind of pain, it seems to need to be seen and heard before it moves on. It needs to be witnessed. It needs to be validated. Not, maybe that's not the right word, but certainly acknowledged. That's a better word. So it seems to be part of our humanity. It doesn't go along with our medical ideas of how things work, but it seems to be part of our soul need, our humanity need, and the body seems to need it too, somehow, that we express it to some other being. And let it be seen and heard and acknowledged. And so the other person's role is to just let the person be in their pain. That's really hard to do. Let them have it. And that sounds, again, really strange. Doesn't that make it worse? Isn't that awful? No, that's the first step. Very similar to grief, where people lose someone and we quickly try to get them away from it and don't talk about that person who just died and get them back into life and hurry. And what they need is to express their love for that person. They need to express their loss. They need to express how awful they feel. They need to express how much they miss them. That's what they need. They need you to just be with them in the grief so then it can move on. Well, physical pain, as far as I can see, is very, very similar. Any pain is like that. It needs to be given the space to just be. And I'm not sure I can totally explain why that is. It just seems to be that is so. And so I do find it's really important to find a way to express. And I think speaking it out to a person is very powerful. I also think that, of course, writing is really good. You can draw it out. You can, if you can move well, some people can't move very well in their bodies, but if you can move at all, you know, you can do some dance just by yourself. That doesn't have to be in front of other people, but finding some way to express what's going on actually does begin to help unlock it, begins to release some kind of healing energy into life. And it gives you a sense of being more in control and being more in the center of your healing process, which we often don't feel.
All right. So we've got about a couple minutes here, and I just want to remind the listeners that the book is called The Pain Companion, Everyday Wisdom for Living With and Moving Beyond Chronic Pain. And so just, obviously this is a non-pharmaceutical approach, when we're talking about chronic pain. I mentioned opiates. It's a big headline. It's a big problem. What's your take on the crisis?
Well, I think that it's too often been just the answer. We don't have a very good way of working with pain. Our medical community doesn't, and our culture doesn't, as we mentioned earlier. So the first thing we do is we just try to kill it and stop it. So I think our perception and our attitudes towards pain as a culture and as a medical community have to shift. And I think, but I'm not, anybody who has to use them to get through a day, I would not ever say that we should cut people off or that we can't have them. You know, there are people that can barely function without them. And so we need to find a way that is not just all or none, that it can't be the only and total answer we're given. Of course, it should be a stopgap. Here, this is what we've got to help you get through the day, to help you mitigate the pain. And let's look at these other non-pharmaceutical ways of actually moving into healing. And one of the problems with the opiates is they don't actually heal. Usually they might help you sleep, which is healing, but they're not necessarily helping the problem. They're just getting you through the day, and then you've got the same thing the next day. So I think we can do something where it's an and, you know, it's that if we need it and these other things, and begin to move towards healing that way.
Wow. Fascinating. And gosh, and mind opening, mind blowing, mindful for sure. Mindful medicine. Thank you, Sarah, so much. I want to
help.
Yeah. I want to help people understand. Your website is thepaincompanion.com. Obviously they can grab your book, The Pain Companion, Everyday Wisdom for Living With and Moving Beyond Chronic Pain. Certainly takes a little time, certainly takes a little effort, but building a relationship, getting curious before critical with your pain, it's curative. It sounds like it's darn curative, and you can live with it and learn from it. All right, mindful listeners, we're going to see you next time. Thanks so much.